Who's back?
I'm back, Chairperson Matsapa.
Remember, other members, if you don't have any challenging circumstance, please have your video on.
Okay, no, Chairperson.
Chairperson, yes, I'm back, but I'm on my way to Parliament, but I can hear you.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just requesting other members who don't have a challenge, especially with connectivity or any other challenge, to have their videos on. I want us to start, honorable members. Now, I just want to check who's back. Honorable Sarupen, are you back? Sarupen, are you back? Joseph, are you back?
Chair, I'm here. I never left.
Okay, but can you turn your camera on if you don't have a challenging circumstance?
Chair, unfortunately, my internet speed is quite slow today.
Okay, that's fine. So you've got the Honorable Ntlangwini, are you back? I see Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, I'm back.
Yeah. See, I don't want to start before. Honorable Joseph, I can see you are back. Okay. Who am I leaving out? Matafa, I see you are back. Those who have got no problem with connectivity or any other thing, please have you are. We've been requested that we should have our cameras on. Peters, are back? Ntlangwini, Honorable Shay.
I'm back, Chair. I'm back.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Honorable Shay, come back. I don't want us to lose any of the responses from National Treasury because I think your questions were very important and they should be attended to and you should be able to. Okay, DG, hope DG, Honorable Lenzan,
you have
put a mask in your car.
I have to. No, I'm in the bus, Jefferson.
Oh, I thought it was in the airplane.
Why? Okay.
I'm in the bus.
I thought it was in the airplane.
Dr. Mampo and the team, please let's start.
Honorable Chair, I will start.
Yeah.
I will start with some of the broad comments and the three colleagues and the others. There's many colleagues from the Treasury on the call. So I'll just make a general comment. I know other members sometimes get frustrated with us as Treasury in the way we report and in the way we come across. Apologies for that. But sometimes, other members, it is very, almost impossible to know what's happening. And this is some obvious point I'm making. What's happening in the country at every department or every municipality in terms of spending. And we only tend to know and intervene on other matters when it's of public interest and the issues in the public domain and it was wrongly done. and then there's a complaint. Then we get involved. But in reality, the premise of our functioning and our responsibility and how we understand our role, whether you look at the MFMA, the PFMA, or you look at the Constitution in terms of the role of the National Treasury. Honourable members, it is presumed and assumed that if the system is functioning in its entirety, then issues will be orderly done in place. Whether you look at it vis-a-vis our role and the role of the provincial treasury, which is very clear in law as to what and when they can get involved. True, also when other, and the chair, you made that point earlier on in your earlier input when you started speaking. If the system is functioning and other agencies of government, in this case you mentioned law enforcement agencies, if they function in terms of their mandate and rules, then clearly our role then will not be in. So we are mistaken sometimes when there's wrongdoing or corruption or not following the due rules, that we come in and we are then asked, not by maybe the committee only, but by general members of the public, where was National Treasury when this handwritten invoice was submitted somewhere in the Eastern Cape? And then we have to ask. But honourable members, you find that in the said municipality or province, or even in some cases, portfolio committees at the level of national government, those matters should be interested, issues of interest for those particular committees and those particular oversight committees in municipalities, etc. In that way, the system then functions. We have clearly indicated in the instruction note that is issued that in the presentation that Estelle was making, we have made it clear, honorable members, that it becomes important that the role of accounting officers is elevated to a point where we know that these accounting officers and accounting authorities can be held accountable. So I just thought I'd make this presentation, I'm opening remarks here, that we understand our role. We know we have to be at every point in time, be on top of our game. But sometimes the system is not functioning effectively to a point where our role is then clear, and the role of provincial treasuries and accounting officers, and who should hold them accountable and what they should be doing. But I'm not in any way trying to suggest that we should not, honorable members, be playing our role, playing an oversight on public finances of South Africa. We should, and we should continue, and honorable members should continue keeping us on our toes insofar as this particular function is responsible. So I know there are direct questions that were asked. I'll ask my team, honorable members, to get into the details of the numbers and details of the responses in terms of those entities. And again, at the end, honorable members, we will come in. But Mampo will lead the team again and take a few questions. Thanks, Chair. I will also come in later again in finalizing the responses. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Perfect.
Dr. Mampo?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. We've already done the choreography, so I'm expecting my team to just jump in and respond to their sections, please.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair, and to the Honourable Members, it's Ravesh. I'm first up in line in terms of the responses from the Honourable Members. Chair, in terms of the first question that was posed by the Honourable Member Sheikh in terms of the SOCs, why are they in the current state that they are? I think I think the responses go to the points that were raised by you, Chair, as well in terms of the turnaround plans. I mean, in terms of the turnaround plans, if one looks at SAA, if one looks at the various other companies, there were turnaround plans that were drafted by the different management teams, and there were funds provided. But the unfortunate issue here is that most of these plans for these entities were not implemented. And maybe just to highlight the effect of the recapitalizations that were provided. I mean, you know, since 2001, there's been 187 billion rand that's been provided in terms of recapitalization. And Chair, you know, in terms of my presentation as well, we did highlight that the exposures in terms of the government guarantees has increased by 100% from around 129 billion to 413 billion. And most of these were to support these entities in terms of their turnaround plan. Then the next question was from the honourable member Kwaiso in terms of the post office, in terms of why no funding was provided to the SAPO. I think we just want to take you back in terms of what's been provided for in terms of the universal service obligations. I think since 2006 there's been around about 3.6 billion that's been provided to the post office for the for the universal services obligation, and then there was a further 7.5 billion rand that's been provided for recapitalizations for the turnaround plan. So we're looking at about 11.1 billion that's been that's been provided to the post office, but we still find the post office in the same situation where it was before, where they have not really turned the corner in terms of its turnaround plan and actually implementing it. Chair, I think the other question was more specific around the SABC, around the retrenchment costs and so forth, and why is Treasury supporting the issues or the initiative from the SABC. If one looks at the first quarter, April to June, their costs in terms of employee costs has increased to around about 50% or 52% of the total expenditure, which is around about 705 million for the year to date from April to June, out of a total expenditure of 1.3 billion. So then the board has actually taken the decision to implement the restructuring of the entity, which includes cost containments with regards to staff. Chair, there was a question by the Honourable Matafa in terms of Denel. Is the business fit for purpose? Chair, we believe that the entity has a turnaround plan that must be implemented. There's no need for the business in my view or the Treasury's view to reconstruct a new turnaround plan. It's just a matter of implementation. The major issues around Denel was sale of non-core assets, which has been slow. So they were meant to dispose of non-core assets to the value of about 1.2 to 1.5 billion, but that hasn't materialized. Chair, in terms of the recapitalization that was provided to Denel, it was 2.4, and that was meant to be augmented by the sale of non-core assets and through the introduction of the SEPs, which is the equity partnerships, but that's been very slow in terms of actually being implemented. I think we agree that that the shareholder has to come to actually respond to the reasons why there's been a lack of movement in terms of the sale of non-core assets. Chair, and then in terms of the issues around why the salaries have not been paid, or have they been paid, or what is the status thereof? Chair, since the beginning of the lockdown, management and the team at Denel have taken salary sacrifices, which is to the order of about 335 million. So that's I think from the lower management they've been trying to pay the full salaries, but I think up to if one looks at the top management or the executive, they've taken about a 70% cut. So if one looks at the cumulative amount in terms of what's been unpaid, two staff, which includes UIF and the pairs you earn. That's about 335 million. In terms of the status thereof, there has been a request from the entity through the Department of Public Enterprises to relax the conditions around the remaining 504 million to be dispersed to use, to pay salaries. But Chair, we just unpaid salaries. I think there's a lot more that's required for working capital to kickstart the business. So that's why, the implementation of the return on plan, which includes the sale of non-core assets, really has to be fast-tracked to ensure that the business can survive and not be placed into business rescue or liquidation. Chair, the question from the Honourable, I think Sarapan it was, if I'm not mistaken, just around whether there have been additional requests from ESCOM for additional funding. There have been no requests for funding. In fact, we meet with them on a weekly basis, and the team as well meet with the Treasury Exco, and there has been a commitment to the Treasury team, to the DPE team, to indicate that there's no further support that would be required apart from what was mentioned in the budget. So that's clear. Then the question around the Air Force Company South Africa, what is Treasury's view on the guarantees and the risk of that? Chair, I think so when we do issue guarantees, I think it's important that we do request, or that we do expect the entity to repay the debt that's been raised against the guarantee. Where an entity cannot repay the debt, and obviously that is a huge concern for us, so we then need to understand whether the guarantee would be the best route or a recapitalization would be the best route. So while the application has been received from the actual entity itself, it needs to go through our internal committee, which is a physical liability committee, which will convene later this month to convene to actually review the request. But one of the key considerations around the issuing of guarantees is the ability of the entity to repay the debt. And we've seen with the likes of SAA is that where we're given guarantees, they were not in a position to repay. So we need to be clear and careful around the awarding of the government guarantees and the ability of the entities to repay this debt. Then the question around where will the money come from in terms of the requests that we've actually outlined for Post Office, for the SABC, and for Denel. I think it's clear, Chair, that funds will have to be found within the existing framework, physical framework. There's no indication, or there's no requests for, or we cannot as the Treasury go out and raise additional funding to bail out these entities. It will have to come from the existing fiscal framework to ensure that we keep within the commitments that we've outlined. Chair, there was a question from the Honourable Peters around which of the entities is a do or a die, which ones we keep. Chair, I wouldn't be in a position to respond to that one. I think we have been engaging with the DPE through the reform or the reforms that need to be implemented around which entities can we merge, which entities can we dispose of, and so forth. So there's a meeting later this week where we are engaging with the DPE around the reform agenda around the SOCs and how which ones do we can we merge, which ones can we do without, and so forth. So I wouldn't want to, give a response now. I think there's more work that needs to be done around, these entities in terms of, whether we keep, I think there's about 750 of them, whether we keep all of them, whether we merge them, whether we close them off, and so forth. There were a few questions from the Honorable Joseph around this, the clarification of the support for ESCOM in terms of the, what's available for ESCOM. Chair, through you, I just want to, explain that the $230 billion was meant for the entity over 10 years, but we've had to basically fast forward or fast track, the recapitalizations to 1920, it was 49 billion, and then for 2021 it's 56, and then for next year it's around about 33 billion. So when one net present values the amounts, and if one goes on the what's available and what can be dispersed, and if we look at 23 billion post 2022, 23, 24, 25, then you're looking at about 23 billion per year. So basically, it's about 69 billion that we come up with that is available to be dispersed to ESCOM. So that's as far as in terms of what is available to be dispersed to ESCOM. So it's not like we can go beyond that. But Chair, I can, if more details required around how we got to those numbers, with ESCOM, we can provide more in terms of how do we get to that net present value so that, it's clear. Chair, then the question was around, the requests that we've received, in terms of the amounts. I think we've mentioned that there are requests for the post office. There are requests for the SABC, which is for 2021, which is this fiscal year. So that will go through the adjustments budget process. So that's for unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. Then the amounts that I mentioned for Denel, the 3.8 billion. That's for the MTEF process, so that will go through a different process. But the two entities that I mentioned for the SABC and the post office, that is for the unforeseen and actually unavoidable. In fact, there's also a request for the airport company as well for 3.5 billion. So there's three requests, Chair, that will go through the unforeseen and unavoidable the adjustments budget process. Chair, then I'm just going to make sure that I'm addressing all the questions. I think, Chair, then you had a few questions as well in terms of the recapitalizations. To your point, the reason why we are bringing forward fast-tracked the recapitalizations for 1920 and 2021 is due to the fact that, ESCOM is not in a position to generate sufficient internal cash to actually settle debt and interest payments. So in 1920, they generated internal cash of about 36 billion, but they had to repay debt and interest payments of about 70 billion. So you can see there's a shortfall there in terms of that they don't have sufficient cash internally to settle that interest and the debt payments. And it was 21 where they need to settle debt and interest of about 90 to 95 billion. And that's why the amount is increased to 56 billion for 2021, Chair. Chair, your question around the coal supplies of ESCOM and what's been done from the trading perspective, Chair, through the weekly monitoring meeting, we also look at at these issues of coal contracts and so forth, and we are engaging with the ESCOM team around procurement issues. In fact, Estelle and her team has been very supportive of us engaging with the ESCOM team. In fact, specific to your questions around the coal contracts, there will be a closed-out report from the ESCOM team that we will get in the next few weeks. And I think that also will be shared through the ESCOM task team, which supports the ESCOM political task team that I think is convening on the 11th of September. So that report will be shared in terms of progress around the coal contracts and what has been done to manage the the coal contracts. Chair, then you raised a question around the minority shareholders of the Air Force Company of South Africa. The 5.4% is basically held by five minority shareholders. So I'm just gonna list them, and then if need be, Chair, I can always send you the formal response. But the first minority shareholder who holds who's actually part of the the 5.4% is the oppressed AXA minority. Then the second one is it's called the Pybus, 34 Investments. Then there's, Tele Investments, there's G10 Investments, and then there's Upfront Investments. So, Chair, those are the five minority shareholders who make up the 5.4% of Air Force Company South Africa. Chair, then you ask around the...
Yes. Sorry for this interjection. If Robert simply sent this detail as he's saying, because look, we have been looking for this information for quite some time. If we could get it detailed, thanks, Chair.
Okay, Ravesh, you heard that.
Thanks.
Exactly, and I think you can even give us the names behind those shareholders, because these are, I can see these were just shelf companies. Who are holding there, who are directors in those companies.
Okay, Chair, we'll do so, Chair, thank you. And then, Chair, in terms of the AXA ratings, they were downgraded. In fact, the ratings by Moody's, there's a global, I think it's global BA2, and then the national is double A3, and then the outlook is negative for AXA, and that was published on the 26th of June. We can also provide more details in terms of the report from Moody's there, Chair, should it be required. Chair, then your question around the slow implementation of the turnaround plan of Denal, I think the major issues, as I've said before, is around the sale of the non-core assets and the SEPs, and I think it's the shareholder should actually actually respond to this one in terms of the slow implementation. But Chair, we also meet with the entity on a weekly basis as well, just to unpack and just to ensure that that the entity does implement the turnaround plan. But with the onset of COVID-19, the sale of non-core assets did not materialize as they should have happened prior to or just during COVID-19. Chair, then your question around the Denal CEO. So he was in the employ of Denal since the beginning of January 2019, and he resigned, I think it was towards the end of July, middle of August, and there was no reasons provided for his leaving the entity itself. And then, Chair, I think your final question was around the SABC, around the revenue. Around the 1.5 billion. My understanding is that's the actual gross revenue that the SABC has been negatively impacted by. So, Chair, through you, I think I've covered all the questions. If I haven't, Chair, please let me know. But I'll now hand over to my colleagues to respond to the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I may, I can take Land Bank.
Yeah.
to finish off the state-owned companies. It's Unati Ngwenya here again. So in terms of the question about the reason for disbursements to farmers being at a reduced scale, so it just it's worth, you know, just giving some background that in terms of the land bank's source of funds, in order to be able to disperse and lend to farmers, these come from the debt capital markets where they issue bonds and also from bank loans. So you will recall, Chair and members, that the funding source has diminished because in January when credit rating was downgraded, then you know, this particular funding source diminished a lot, and then it caused a liquidity crisis, which then led to the default of 1st of April. So then these events then mean that the collections from the operations of the land bank, so in the ordinary course of business, as they collect from farmers, as they repay their loans, this then becomes, you know, the remaining source of their funding. So in managing all of these constraints, then this is the balance I was talking about that needs to be struck in terms of having to continue to lend to the farmers. So instead of then sort of letting this source of funding dry up and them not lending to farmers at all, it's then at a reduced rate. So this is the primary reason for the reduction overall, if I explain it. And then if I move on to the other question about the situation on the intervention and negotiation with lenders and why, you know, we have the particular bank that the land bank announced had instituted legal proceedings against them, why they decided to go out of the discussions of the lenders. So I wouldn't, you know, Chair, I wouldn't venture to answer on their behalf, but, you know, just to confirm in terms of how the proceedings have been going, the lenders did indeed organize themselves to have conversations and negotiations with the land bank. Those are still intact. You know, the bank in question was part of those, but also just to remind, you know, the community that in terms of any lender's rights, they do still have a right to institute such legal proceedings against the land bank to recover their debt. But the nature of the negotiations is such that this is done in a code, you know, the restructuring of the debt is done in an organized manner, and no lender is preferred above another one. So I think that ends that one. And then there was another question about, is there a possibility that that the court case will cost money, and where will the money come from? So the land bank has indicated that they will be opposing the court application. So, you know, they will need to spend money to undertake that. And then in terms of what I've just outlined about the operate, you know, their own internally generated funds, and as they continue to get repayments from their loan and their in the ordinary course of business of running their operations, they have been receiving funds of that nature. So you know, there is a some fund, but you know, the recognition that these funds do have to be stretched in light of no, you know, the bank loans and the debt capital market source of funding being greatly diminished. And then I think the last one, Chair, was from you, where you were asking about the repayment of interest. Will it be from own cash or will it be from the 3 billion appropriation? And then how will the 3 billion come, all at once or staggered? So, Chair, I have mentioned, you know, in the Order of Course of Business, the Land Bank does have its own funds. Then the 3 billion appropriation will be able to augment you know, that availability of cash. And then the discussion we are having with the land bank is precisely to time the staggering of how these funds are transferred to them. So funds ideally need to be made available to alleviate pressure points in terms of their cash flow as they manage and you know, optimally try to stretch this money for the purpose of servicing interest, other financial obligations, and also maintain their operations. So at this point in time, we don't have confirmed dates, but in terms of the objective and what we are trying to achieve is to make sure that the funds become available and alleviate pressure at times where their cash will be constrained. Thank you, Chair. I'll end there.
Jay, can I just add on land bank?
Please do.
One question on Standard Chartered Bank, and I want to just maybe quickly just address it if you can.
Please.
We come a long way with Standard Chartered, unfortunately, and I don't know how nice or how best to put it, but let me say it nonetheless here. We have been engaging with them at my level with their headquarters in Dubai, the regional president who the South African office report to. Obviously, there have been engagements with them, the level of the office, them not, you know, embarking on an action that they embarked on, them being part of the lenders group in a way that we have a broad understanding to say we are fixing a problem. And that was my approach, that we are fixing a problem. And put the reasons aside as to where we are at. And the lenders, South African lenders understood, most of them, and South African lenders, in understanding where we are at, they kind of clearly put it in a way that we have to understand each other. And then they were playing the ball, and they are playing the ball as we speak. So it is important, honorable members, that we find a way of saying Standard Chartered exercised their rights. In exercising their rights, you know, it was unfortunate, and that was a discussion with them, that you cannot, can you hold on as you are fixing, we are setting the commitments that we made, you will be paid, but they wouldn't understand, unfortunately. And if you remember, Chair, in particular, and that's why I said I wanted a way of saying it. 2017 back when we are dealing with the problem, Standard Chartered at the time and Citibank exercised their rights. And these are international banks. We don't have issues with them. We know we don't have to, you know, they've got certain prudential, you know, obligations, and we also have, and we don't want to in any way to intimidate any bank. But we made it clear that it's unfortunate that they chose the hard approach and the hard line, because that in a way was not, insofar as I was concerned, in the spirit of engaging and fixing, and them assisting us and fixing problems of which some of them are structural, and they date many, many years, even before 1994. So it is important that, so you put that in context, that they acted, we don't want to scare any international bank away and say we won't meet our obligations, whether they guarantee debt or not guarantee debt. But it's something that we will not leave lying with them. We'll all continue engaging with them and to understand that we are in any way here building essentially a 25-year-old democracy. And it's not easy. There will be challenges along the way. They are understanding without impacting on their prudential rights. The understanding is quite critical. And we also, we've seen that with local banks where there is that level of understanding in terms of where we are at, but however, not stopping them to exercise the right of anyone that is obligated. So, Chair, I thought, let me say that in coded language for now, but if need be, we will engage with them, and maybe at a later stage, we can go back to come to this committee and update you. But we, in the Land Bank and I and the team in the Treasury have been engaged, and we think sooner the Land Bank should turn around in terms of how it's conducting business, recognizing that the management there is new, and also recognizing that there's clear indication that the business structure and model of the land bank will have to change in order for, and the management there and the board are quite committed to ensuring that entity stand around. Thank you, sir. I will leave it at that for now.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Thank you, honourable members. I will also look at questions related to the procurement, the public procurement bill, and so on. Firstly, I'm just going to answer some questions around the public procurement bill that was asked by Honourable Member Ntlangwini and the chairperson. Firstly, the public procurement bill will be submitted to Parliament within this financial year. It is on our annual performance plan for it to be published or to be submitted to Parliament, and we will be looking at engaging the committee before then. We are currently compiling all the comments and incorporating it, and after this, a whole host of workshops with various stakeholders will continue. And when that is done, and we are at a point where we can submit to Parliament or to this committee, we will engage with this committee. The Public Procurement Bill, the relevance of it currently is that it is, I think COVID taught us quite a few lessons in terms of emergency procurement, and it might not have been the focus in the Public Procurement Bill as it stands. And I think when this has taught us that we need to look at some of the mechanisms that we need to contemplate for the National Treasury to strengthen our procurement in general and in terms of emergency procurement for future. Then I also just want to highlight the fact that the difference between the 18 billion and the 15 billion, Honourable Member Joseph, is the fact that the OCPO or the expenditure is reporting up to August. In other words, the 30th of August, that's when the figures were drawn. And Mampo can maybe just confirm that her figures are for quarter one, which is only the 3 months, whereas our figures have got two extra months. That's why there's a difference between the 18 and the 15 billion. The confirmation of the 18 billion, it may be underestimated, and the reasons were provided on slide 2 for some of the reasons why it is underestimated. But the other reason is that a whole host of departments did not use the correct chart of account line to report against COVID expenditure, and our public finance statistics unit is currently working with the departments to rectify that matter. So until we have rectified that, we can assume that that 18 billion is underestimated. The departments, from the national sphere, the departments that have not reported so far to our knowledge as of this morning is the Department of Public Service Administration, Human Settlements, and Water and Sanitation. Those are the national departments. There are quite a few public entities, too many to list as not reporting, and I think the list that's on the National Treasury's website will give you an indication of those departments and entities that have not reported. I want to now go into the reporting on procurement. Government has got...
Chair, on a point of order, Chair.
Please.
Chair, yes. Can we please, the National Treasury, just please give us the list and stop referring us to a website? Can they please just send us the list of people that haven't submitted, or the departments that and entities that haven't submitted to the committee, please? Can they please send that? We're not going to go to a website. They must help us with it. Thank you.
Estelle, that's clear.
Thank you. I will certainly do that, Chairperson.
Thank you.
With regards to the procurement reporting at the granular level that is required by this committee, government does not have an integrated procurement system. We have over 719 procuring entities with very diverse procurement and payment systems. The only source that we have for expenditure figures are the BAS system or Vulindlela and LOGIS. And LOGIS, not all government departments are using LOGIS, and LOGIS is basically an order system. But BAS is our payment system, and that is where we would have a very accurate expenditure figures at a very high level. And when I say high level, it means the chart of account level up to the lowest item level, which is not sufficient enough for us to analyze the transactional information. And what I mean with transactional information is that for procurement, you need an item description with a unit of measure, with a unit price. And BAS does not provide us with that granular information. That is why we are why we have issued instruction note number 11 with the reporting requirement that we can analyze the transactional data. And that information will then provide us with the trends as was required or that was mentioned by Honorable Imam in terms of how much are we paying for what items, who is spending the money on which items, with which supplier. So this information that we will be getting as from the 21st of September would be the first deadline for this granular information to reach Treasury. Our first report in that much detail will be issued and shared at the end of this month, and then monthly thereafter. So the first reiteration would be for expenditure from April to the end of August, and a report will be provided the end of September, and then monthly thereafter. I think that may be with regards to the weakness that we have in terms of procurement. Procurement expenditure is that we have so many diverse systems and not one integrated procurement system. And the information that we require now would only be COVID related, but we are looking at expanding that and making it a integrated reporting system for all expenditure at that level going forward. Our immediate focus would be on COVID expenditure. I think maybe just to answer Honorable Imam again is that during all our reiterations of the instruction notes that was issued in terms of the procurement of PPEs and fabric masks, National Treasury did provide maximum prices throughout the process, and even in one of the instructions, we allowed for a 10% variance to cater for geographical differences. And I think there it might have been that some departments could not get the commodities at the prices due to demand. Supply and demand differences in that specific geographic area, or it might have just been ignorance. And I think that I would pause there, Chairperson. I I think I have answered most of the questions. Thank you.
Dr. Mampo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Lebo, please respond on agriculture. Mark, please respond on health. Thank you.
Thank you, Mampo. Thank you, honorable members. The underspending of the 1.8 million from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. The main reason is because during COVID, there was no activity. Hence, the department was not spending, especially during lockdown, because the department indicated that part of them affecting the land reform process, the land restitution process, is to make sure that there's interaction with the communities, you know, to conduct research and to verify the claims. So that process could not be implemented because of the interactions during the lockdown were not allowed. So the department could not, you know, carry some elements of this program. But also, in order to transfer the land, the department needs the DIS office. And during lockdown, the DIS office was not active. It was not operational. So it means acquiring land as well as transferring land as per the law, DIS office featuring in that process. It was absent because of the lockdown. And those are some of the main reasons that the department has advanced to us. And also during the first quarter and the second quarter, you are likely to see spending lagging, mainly because during this period, department are again conducting research, they are verifying claims, that they are researching, they are making sure that the money will go to the right beneficiaries. If the land, for instance, belongs to the funder members, they need to trace the funder members before the money can be paid out. So this is what, you know, this is what led to the slowing down of the spending in the first quarter. But also in the third and the fourth quarter, you are likely to see now picking up because when the department will be implementing, the spending will be making out the payments. So those are the key reasons why the department was not able to fast track their land reform process. But the department is currently finalizing the catch-up plan.
Okay, Mampo, come in. I think Liuhang is frozen. Dr. Mampo? Who's next? Is it Mark?
So it's Mark Fletcher here. If I could maybe briefly come in until Lebo gets back on health. I'll be just quite quick just on the question about underspending, and good morning to all committee members. So normally in health, you know, Q1 is not an easy quarter to determine the trends because things are still quite early in the year. So, you know, we will get greater clarity on the trends by Q2. And this is particularly the case for COVID because obviously with the beginning of the COVID period in Q1, a number of programs were slowed down. That's particularly the hospital revitalization grant, the building program, also the vaccination program on the HPV vaccine, which is the vaccine that prevents cancer of the cervix. So with some of the schools starting to close, difficulty visiting schools to vaccinate. And there's been a general problem in health through the COVID period, which is actually becoming quite a serious problem now after six months of lockdown virtually, that, you know, a lot of people actually are being denied health care, and we're seeing decreases in vaccination rates on a number of vaccines. So that's something we've got to keep an eye on. Because the numbers you're seeing also are before the special adjustment budget, some of the areas of underspending will be shifted, and you will have actually already approved shifts in the special adjustment budget. So all of those will clear out by Q2. But the one area which I would like to point out to the committee again that we remain worried about, which we brought to the committee's attention before, is the National Health Insurance Indirect Grant. This grant has been very seriously underspent by the department from its onset 4 to 5 years ago. The department has not put appropriate management skills into managing the National Health Insurance grant. And that's partly why the National Health Insurance is not rolling out at an appropriate pace. We've requested the committee's assistance with this previously, and with a new minister now and new DG, I mean, I hope that the department will take up the implementation of the NHI much more seriously, because, you know, there's been too much policy discussion and very little implementation, certainly very little spending. What you see in this current first quarter, which is a bit of a continuation of what we've seen in previous years, is firstly the department not moving at all on contracting general practitioners. That's general practitioners outside their practices. The payment of the general practitioners in their practices has been shifted to provinces through the direct grant, but the payment of general practitioners in their doing work in their own practices, for example, in the United Kingdom, if in England, if you go to see your doctor, that's paid through the National Health. You go to see your GP. Now, the department has shifted all the money away from that, entirely, all of it, and most of it subsequent into COVID. But some of the remaining areas on the personal services component is for mental health and cancer services, both very important areas. Substantial underspending on both because of inadequate planning and management from the national department. And on the indirect national health insurance components, the component that helps with setting up some slowness to get out IT infrastructure and systems to the provinces, part of that linked to COVID. But generally, we would appreciate the committee taking up with the new minister and new DG in health, the whole issue of national health insurance and getting their act together on it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mampo,
it's Julia Branche.
Julia, you've got about five minutes.
On your specific question around, do we follow up, do we reject the reasons that departments give us. We explained the PSMA and 3D regulations give accounting officers the responsibility for managing their budgets, for planning and for recording their expenditure and being able to explain the variance. So we come and see the committee on a quarterly basis, but we get those expenditure reports on a monthly basis. We analyze them, we send the department a report, and if we are unhappy with the way they've explained things, we then have a meeting with them, and we talk through what are the real issues. And we ask them then to adjust their plans. Because, Chair, you can understand, if you plan to spend 100 and you only spend 80, then it seems like you're underspending, but when in fact you didn't plan properly, you shouldn't have planned to spend 100. You should only have planned to spend 80. Then nobody would be any the wiser. So it's not that we reject, we don't reject the explanations, but we try and dig deeper into those explanations. So all of us, the six of us, have had many meetings with our departments to ask them, why are you not spending? Because as you know, Chair, we borrow a lot of this money at an interest rate. And if you don't use it, then really that defeats the purpose of the borrowing. And so in our report to this committee, you will note there's, we go through all the programs and then there's a specific set of issues where we say issues for the committee to note. And that is where we will bring to this committee's attention those departments that are seemingly having a problem in dealing with some of the expenditure. So sure, we do deal with it, but we don't take over the responsibilities of the accounting officers, as you know. Thank you.
No, that's fine, Julia. I think that we get that, right? But I just wanted to check this part that you are saying yes. Because I can just write resident, give them to you, and then you become a pipeline to the committee. And you're saying that's not the case. I think that's I hear that. Perhaps we'll follow up. At least you do engage. Because okay, Mpo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Quickly, 3 minutes I'll be done. I know we're running out of time. So the questions that we not responded to, the first one was the implications of the delay in the program. So basically here, there's different types of delays. If it's delays of paying municipal services or confirming invoices for DPW for accommodation, those will not have much cost implications. But for certain, if these delays are infrastructure projects, we will definitely see some cost overruns, which is one thing that one will have to try and monitor. And the departments that are not reporting according to the guidelines, Chairperson, a week or so ago, we submitted a 157-page report. It lists all of those departments and all of the reasons why they haven't really followed the guidelines. So that information has already been submitted. The question on social grants, on the understanding, just to clarify, on one of the slides where we have social grant, we say that the understanding is 16 billion, and it's not because of lower economic activity, but it's because the social grants were paid in advance in March rather than all of them being fully paid in April. So the reason for the understanding social grant is not because of the lockdown or lower economic activity, but it's because of the agreement that was done earlier. The chairperson said something, honorable member said something on DECO overspending. I looked at the numbers in the report, and the numbers show an underspending, overall underspending of 13.7%. And if you look at the compensation line where the issue was, the projected spending was 812 million, and they only spent 788. So that is also an underspending. And if you look at the targeted employees that they wanted was 3,785, but year to date is 2,176. So those are the actual numbers that are in the report that we submitted to the committee, and there's no overspending by that. Yes, sorry, Chairperson. And then I'm trying to speak as fast as I can. And then we have already submitted to Cindy the report on GCIS contract, who they contacted. Cindy will circulate it to the secretariat, and Darren will then send it to the chairperson. And then the last one was on correctional services, where the question was those invoices were paid. Partially they were paid, but they are still they're still sorting out, especially the ones for April and May. But we would have rectified all of that information in the second quarter, chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. DG, as you close, you see, I can see again, you are emphasizing my point, because no one of you is saying anything about the communication in the department. So, DG, can you please speak to that? I said we only see National Treasury when there's a problem, when there are good things, you don't communicate, you can't communicate, you don't communicate. What are we going to do about that? Do you agree with this statement, or is there something? Please come in and make your final remarks.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm not going to be long. This is our 3-year discussion, 4 years. I agree with you totally. We need to communicate the good things that we do, and I concede now in public that we need to communicate more. On a more serious note, I think, Chair, you are right. We tend sometimes to keep information that the public should be aware of. 500 billion rand was not towed or stolen as in the way that the perception out there is. We can break it down, we can explain the details of it, and we have to communicate more. As Julia said, on a monthly basis, we get important information from spending agencies. We report on a quarterly basis, same in municipalities. But we need to at least agree with you, we need to communicate more. And the other many good things, by the way, that we do on the team that's coming up in the treasury, and including the other good things. But the last point here, I think we always welcome this engagement. And I miss this committee in my previous role, in Mampo's role now, because it is this committee that if we partner with properly, because where we are, we've got the advantage of information and data and official information that we can make available to you. And then we can jointly with you, Chair, engage with departments, and you can also help us, by the way, improve the spending processes and spending, and commitments that the departments made, whether in the annual performance plans or in the strategic plans, etc., in terms of how appropriated money is spent. So I welcome this engagement, and we as Mampo is always saying to me, that please don't come to my committee, you interfere with my committee. Yeah, I would want to interfere with Mampo's role every time. But thank you very much, and I look forward to sending you copies of information that we make available publicly at various intervals, so that you don't again ask this question. Thank you.
Thank you, TG. Dr. Mampo, and the whole National Treasury team. As I close, just please note this. I'm saying there's nothing as depressing as being told that the undertaking of SOEs are never followed up, especially around turnaround plans. You see, a lot of questions start coming to us. Is there a deliberate supporter strategy? I would rather have a situation where the plan was implemented and it failed. But failure to implement the plan is gross dereliction of duty, to say the least. We also have that the 18 billion rand, there is a give and take as far as 18 billion rand expenditure is concerned. Can we ask DG Mampo that once the figures are properly reconciled, they are sent to us? So I think that's very important. But I'd like to say, definitely it can't be 36 billion rand. You can't be off the mark by 100%. So it's anything between 18 billion and 36 billion rand. But would like to have those numbers shared with us. And then with Julia, you've just spoken about the cost implication of underspending. I don't know whether you, DG, whoever responsible for this, just to share with the committee, take your time. Once you have done, you know that there's a lot in your plate, but just to understand exactly how much are we losing as a country on this underspending thing. I'm more interested in the financial implications in terms of the interest that we pay for money, which is just somewhere seated in the bank and not doing what it's supposed to do. And lastly, the public procurement bill would. Before it comes to us, after it has gone back, it's there, it's out, it's in the public, it's being discussed. Can we request that it be shared with us? DG, whoever is responsible, must come before this committee so that we can interact with it even before it's formally presented to us, so that we are part of the process of trying to shape us. My interest is surely you know by now, DG, would be to see the role of the public procurement bill as far as transforming the economy is concerned. You know, the triple PFA never achieved that objective. It talks to using the budget to try and transform the economy, using the two trillion rand budget to try and transform the economy. But please, can that be? And DG, you'll have to be here when that one is presented. Not only the CPO. I think this, oral members, I know that you still had an item of the minutes, and with your permission, I want us to deal with the minutes in our next meeting. We needed to interact with this, and the powers that be were kind enough with us to give us at least one more hour so that to make sure that we do justice to the presentations where the colleagues from National Treasury would have spent a lot of time. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, yes. Sorry to interrupt. I appreciate all your points you raised in summary, but the point that was raised by Mark, the huge underspending of the National Health Insurance, I think it's almost another cry to the committee that we must assist in addressing that point. Thank you.
I thank you. Darren, note that, because it also talked to the Department of Health as to the departments that we need to interact with. We'll have to look at that, oral members and institutions that we still need to interact with. And we'll have to do that before the tabling of the MTPPS. As you know, once the minister and DG come and present that, you were unable to do any other thing but deal with the midterm budget policy statement. But once more, thank you very much, colleagues, the members of the media who decided to join us, the support staff, members of the public, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Good, Chairperson.